chromosomes. Little strands of nucleic acids and proteins are the fundamental genetic instructions that tell us who we are at birth. Most people are born with 46 chromosomes, but each year in the United States, about 6,000 people are born with an extra chromosome, making them a person with Down syndrome. If you've ever encountered someone with Down syndrome, you know that they are some of the kindest, most joyful people you will ever meet. They truly have something extra. My name is Lisa Nichols, and I have spent the last 24 years as both the CEO of Technology Partners and as the mother to Allie. Allie has something extra in every sense of the word. I have been blessed to be by her side as she impacts everyone she meets. Through these two important roles as CEO and mother to Allie, I have witnessed countless life lessons that have fundamentally changed the way I look at the world. While you may not have an extra chromosome, every leader has something extra that defines who you are. Join me as I explore the something extra in leaders from all walks of life and discover how that difference in each of them has made a difference in their companies, their families, their communities, and in themselves. If you like this episode today, please go to Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen and leave us a 5-star rating. I'm delighted to have Jen LaBee on the show today. Jen is an entrepreneur, brand creator, and founder, president, and CEO of Cotton Babies. Well, Jen, I am so excited to have you on the Something Extra podcast today. I've been looking forward to this, and you and I have kind of talked offline, and you and I met, and I don't even know how long ago this was, but the very first time we met was at a National Association of Women Business Owners, and you and I were both on a speaker panel.
That's been a long time ago.
It has been a long time ago. And so we met then. And then what I realized then, we were both in YPO. At that time, we were going to the same church, St. Louis Family Church. This is the way it happens sometimes, right? It's like you meet somebody and then you're like, wow, we're connected in this way, in this way. But you and I have remained friends. And I am so excited to have you on today to share your story. I know what our listeners, and I don't want to embarrass you, Jen. That's not my intention, but I just want them to know just a little bit about you. I mean, Jen has received so many recognitions and awards, and so she would never want me to say all of these things because she's the most humble person, confident but humble person I know. You know, she was the most influential businesswoman from the St. Louis Business Journal. Jen received one of the 40 Under 40 awards. She was listed as one of the 50 Missourians you should know. She got a Leader Distinction Award for entrepreneurship from the YWCA in 2017. We both love the YWCA and their mission. Right, Jen. World Affairs Council, St. Louis Regional International Partnership awarded Jen their Global Pioneer Award in 2019. I mean, just so many different things. But I know, again, that is not why she does what she does. But I'm grateful to her for just her leadership and what she's bringing to the world. So you're married to Jimmy. You got 4 amazing kids, right, Jen? You've got Andrew, Oscar, Elsie, and Louis.
Louis. He would tell you his name is Louis.
His name is Louis, and I love that. I love that since he's St. Louis born and raised. But, you know, tell me a little bit about how you grew up. Did you grow up here in St. Louis? Did we talk about that? I'm not sure I knew about that.
I did not grow up in St. Louis. It feels like everywhere. Like I should just, if there was an answer to that question, that was just kind of hashtag all the places, that was my life. My dad moved us around a lot because of his job. He was a federal employee and everything that he did was project based. So we moved 18 times before I left home when I was 17 years old. And I eventually settled in St. Louis. I did an internship with a missions organization fresh out of high school, spent a year working as a nanny, and then eventually landed here in St. Louis working as a programmer for CPI Corporation, doing all the website design for Sears Portrait Studios. That was a really long time ago, and St. Louis has been home ever since.
That is crazy. So you did you say you moved 18 times in 17 years?
Yeah, we did. And that
Wow.
wasn't the end. Like, my parents kept moving after I left home. So they settled down. I like to call Whitefish, Montana home. That's the place that I enjoyed the most and spent the most time in growing up. It's beautiful there.
I did not know that about you, but we love Montana. We did a family trip to Montana. If people have not been to Montana, make a point to take your family there. We did a dude ranch, Jen, about 5 years ago, I guess it was in Montana, and we fell in love. So much so that our oldest son came back and started looking for ranches. He thought
Oh,
we needed to buy a ranch in Montana.
well,
But it's beautiful there.
yeah, it's
Oh,
stunning. It's
it is
stunning.
stunning. It really is. So tell me this, what were your interests? I mean, we're going to talk about this, but you obviously started in tech, which is really awesome, and started as a programmer. I think you did that for a couple of different companies, but you know what you're doing today, you're an entrepreneur. Now you're a CEO, president of a company. What were your interests when you were growing up? Did you think that you were going to go into tech, or how did you fall into that?
I thought I was going to be a stay-at-home mom, have a huge brood of children. I was going to homeschool them all. I was going to have a garden. I love learning in general. I love learning. And I thought that my life was going to be one of, continuing to learn and, a traditional family design where my husband would go to work and support the family, and I would support the family from the home perspective. And that is not at all what evolved for us. I think originally when I graduated from high school, I was most interested in joining the Air Force. And I had started the process of seeking, I think it's called an appointment from your state rep that you have to get to be able to go to the Air Force Academy. So I thought that's what I wanted to do. But then I realized that they weren't going to let me fly planes and eventually go to space as an astronaut because my eyes were so bad. So you have to have really good eyesight to be able to do that. And I was like, well, bail on that idea because who wants to go to the Air Force Academy if you can't go to space, right?
Right.
At least that was my 17-year-old philosophy at the time. So I thought, well, I'll become a missionary. And, I'm interested in helping people who are in need. So I joined an internship program, and I thought when I left that program that I was going to become a nurse and move overseas and work on planting Bible schools in different interesting parts of the world. Again, that's not exactly where I landed. So I taught myself to code when I was 18 years old, and that really
That's remarkable. I mean, were self-taught, right? Did you
Yeah.
have any mentors or anything, Jen, like that you could bounce things off of, or were you completely, you just got the textbook and said, I'm going to learn how to code?
Well, there really wasn't a textbook at the time. This was like really early before the internet was the internet. You probably could have registered target.com if you wanted to. I registered jen.org, JENN.org. And I've owned that. It cost me $100 when I was 18, and I've owned it ever since. But literally, just view source on websites and copy and experiment and build on a web server on my local computer. And I gradually figured it out one step at a time. And that's what got me my first real job when I was 19 years old.
I love it. Well, okay. So I'm going to sum up here. I mean, here's what I've learned about you today, just in this short time. You're an adventurer because you thought you wanted to go to space. So, you had to be adventurous to do that. You're also an inventor. You're an inventor because truly, I mean, inventing these websites, I mean, that's what you're doing. You're creating things. And I knew this about you already. You're a voracious learner, and learners are, that's something when you have a love of learning, Jen, that carries with you throughout your whole life. I mean, are you still learning as a person?
Oh, 100%. I went back to school a couple of years ago to get another master's degree because I was bored. Like, why not engage with the space that we have to engage with and the people that we have to engage with and the opportunities and the topics that we have to learn about and just become a better person so we can better serve the people in the world around us. And once you've conquered a topic, go on to the next thing because it's fun.
It's exciting. It is. It is exciting. And there's so much out there to learn. So, all right. Well, I love all of that. And you already mentioned you did go back, I think it was maybe 2011, and got your MBA from WashU, which if you're a St. Louis person, you know just what an amazing university that is. But, you know, I'm gonna kind of move into what you are doing today. So in 2002, you and Jimmy founded Cotton Babies. And, you know, so you call yourself an accidental entrepreneur. But, you know, I was thinking about that this morning, Jen. I was thinking, you know, I want you to tell our listeners the story behind it, because necessity is sometimes the mother of invention, right? And you guys found yourself in some necessity. Can you kind of tell our listeners that story of Cotton Babies?
So I met my husband while I was working at CPI, building websites. We got married 2 years later. And not too long after that, we found out that we were pregnant with our first baby. And we were laid off when the tech stocks crashed the first time that most people don't remember. it was the first big tech bubble burst. And there just wasn't jobs. Like, there would be an open position and hundreds of people would apply for that one position. And I knew more people in my field who were out of work than people who actually had jobs at that point in time. Most of my friends had been laid off within, you know, a 6 or 8 month time period. So we had this baby and we had to figure out how we were going to pay for both groceries and diapers. And we didn't have enough income. My husband was working just for something just over minimum wage at a local copy shop, and it covered our health insurance so we could have a baby, but it didn't actually pay for all of the necessities of life. So I was on WIC at the time, and we used $100 that we had in a bank account that PayPal was brand new. It's a whole new idea, and it had to be attached to a bank account. So we had set aside this $100 in this bank account for PayPal to talk to. And I was walking down Michigan Avenue with my mom and dad in Chicago. They were students at Moody Bible Institute in Chicago, and we were up to visit them when our oldest was 8 weeks old. So I'm walking down the street in this gorgeous sling that I had received, you know, at a baby shower or something like that. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. people complimented me on the sling over and over. And I talked to my husband on the way home, and we agreed that we would spend that $100 in that bank account to buy slings, because there was no other distributor for that brand in St. Louis. And I took those slings and I put 10 business cards in the pocket of every sling. And initially I sold them for $5 over wholesale. And those cards ended up getting handed out by women wearing their babies in malls and in nursing rooms at churches and all kinds of places. And my phone started to ring. I didn't even have a website, but I was selling a lot of slings. Then we realized that the same people buying slings were also buying cloth diapers. And that's how we got into the cloth diaper space as far as selling them. A few years later, you know, we launched our own brand, and it was launched into somewhat of a vacuum. And today we've got 7 different brands in the mom and baby space. But it was really kind of the timing and just a whole bunch of things combined with like the grace of God that put us where we were at the right time in the right place to get the next thing off the ground. And that's really what put Cotton Babies on the map. And that's why we're talking today.
Yeah. It's just such an incredible story. And you said you've got 7 brands. What are those? Right. I know you started with Bum Genius, right? Tell me a little bit about those brands and what's different about a Cotton Baby diaper than, say, another diaper, Jen?
That's a great question. So Cotton Babies was our retail store. So when we were selling other people's diapers and slings and things like that, we would sell it all through cottonbabies.com. When we created Bum Genius, that brand of diapers was created specifically for cotton babies. We had no plans to wholesale it to anybody else. But as soon as it hit the market, our phone started to ring off the hook with people who wanted to sell that brand in their stores. And then Whole Foods called. And then, Walmart called and Target called. Like, it was just kind of one thing after the other. And we grew. That's why I say I'm an accidental entrepreneur. Like, I didn't plan to have a business, and all of a sudden I'm selling slings and cloth diapers. And oh, wait, we need a diaper because these other two brands are not working out for various reasons. And so we've got to have revenue. So, okay, let's put a diaper out that we've got all these ideas. And it materialized, and all of a sudden it took off. And I was all of a sudden running a YPO qualifying business with a bunch of little kids. And everybody grew up around my feet. I would take calls with a baby nursing on my lap and, people working around me in my bedroom, right? Like, it was a hot mess.
Mess.
It became less of a hot mess over time, but I'm so grateful, honestly, for all of the learning that came through all of that. It feels crazy. It feels hard. It feels like so much learning. But the most important thing that I think I've learned through all of that is how important it is to just be secure in the most important thing, which is that the most important thing is the most important thing. And keeping, we've been believers. I've been a believer most of my life. My husband became a believer not too long before we met. And it was a personal transformation experience of going from Martha to being Mary, like being willing to be content and sit and learn and wait on God, where Martha's always running around and we got to do this, and we got to do that, and you're worried and you're blah, 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 and like nobody can get you to slow down because you're talking so fast and you're jumping from conversation to conversation. And God's like, hey, just wait. Like, I want you here with me right now, not doing all of that. Like, your job is to be here and be present with me, because if you can't be with me, you can't reflect me. You can't be the city set on the hill. You can't be a light to the rest of the world. So get your stuff together, Jen. And sit.
Well, you certainly are that, Jen, and you are reflecting God's glory and just His provision. And it sounds like it happened overnight. It was an overnight success. I know that's not the case, though. And it took time. It took time. It took patience on yours and Jimmy's part. But the waiting part, I think is sometimes waiting on God, that's the hard thing really for us, because we want it in our timing. And I think yours is such a beautiful story of how every one of those things that you did, prepared you for the next thing. I'm even thinking, Jen, because you said, hey, we started selling these slings and we didn't even have a website yet. Well, guess what? You were a website designer. So,
Imagine that.
imagine that. So, you could stand up a website probably, in your sleep. So it's just such an amazing story. We have so much more to talk about, but we do need to take a quick break, and we'll be right back with Jen LaBie on the Something Extra podcast.
In business, the tendency is to seek out partners who are bigger, faster, stronger. When it comes to IT, you should be looking for smarter, faster, better. That's just what you'll find with the talented technologists at Technology Partners. Our experts develop custom solutions to tackle your most complex challenges, all to simplify your processes in the smartest, most efficient way possible. The time to be swift and nimble starts now. Go to technologypartners.net/solutions and see what's possible.
So welcome back to the Something Extra podcast with Jen LaBie. So Jen, your diapers, I mean, we know there are reasons to use cloth diapers, obviously economical, right? And you even figured it out. How much does it cost per child to use disposable diapers?
So babies changed 6 to 7 times a day, whether they're wearing cloth or disposables. And every one of those disposable diaper changes can cost somewhere between 12 to 14 cents on the low side, all the way up to 45 cents on the high side. So if you're going to buy a low-end store brand product, you're going to pay less. If you're going to buy a higher-end, very natural-focused disposable product, you're obviously going to pay more per diaper. So right down the middle of those cost ranges is about $2,000 per baby. So for our family, if we had used 100% disposable diapers, it would have cost us $8,000 just in diapers. And it's amazing when you stop to think about the impact on a family of that expense. I was a mom choosing between diapers and food when we started our business, and the business transformed our family and our life, but there is fully one third of families in North America. And this is a pre-pandemic statistic. I don't believe there has been a new study published since the pandemic showing the change in that statistic, and how poverty has continued to impact families raising babies.
Right. And we'll talk about that because I know you've started a couple of nonprofits to help. But another aspect is the waste aspect. I don't know how many landfills are filled with disposable diapers, but there's got to be a lot of them. But you guys did something different with your cloth diaper. And I've talked about this offline. I mean, there's a fashion element to your diapers. So tell our listeners a little bit about that, Jen.
Sure. We like to talk about a multi-pronged approach to how people enjoy cloth diapers. So it can be that economic impact on a family. And then there's also the environmental impact that people participate in, regardless of how they fall into our funnel. So, from an environmental perspective, every baby wearing disposable diapers between birth and age two creates about 1 ton of landfill waste. And a cloth diaper, our product was one size, so it fits from 8 to 35 pounds, so usually from birth to age two when most kids potty train. And we saw that those diapers were being used for three, and sometimes they could be stretched to a fourth child, which means that for each child, we're preventing one physical ton of landfill waste that uses that set of 24 diapers. And over the lifespan of a baby, we could see, or over the lifespan of a diaper set, we could see as many as, this is a crazy number, 28,000 disposable diapers not used.
Oh,
Isn't that just
that is
stunning?
incredible.
It's
It is.
breathtaking.
It is. It truly is. It's not something that a lot of people probably think about, but they will now after hearing this. That's amazing.
My oldest child, his great 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 grandchildren will, if they went to the dump, would be able to find his disposable diapers in the landfill, because it takes about 500 years in theory for a disposable diaper to decompose. It's a stunning impact on our planet, and in my opinion, one of the most irresponsible uses of resources. There are times when families absolutely have to use disposable diapers. And our family had those seasons where we were, using both cloth and disposable. But if you have a washer and dryer, it is, we're all taking care of the planet around us. It is a good choice to be able to reach for a cloth diaper when you can.
Yeah, that's I love that environmental aspect to it. You guys, though, with your diapers, you actually have a fashion element where you said that you're the first to for cloth diapers to put a design on them. Because we think back, I mean, I remember, way back when the cloth diapers were just these white diapers, Jen, cotton diapers with the big safety pins. That's what probably most people think about, but these are fashionable diapers now.
So it's a little bit of a stretch to say that we were the first people to do a print. But in the season of the cloth diaper, we'll just call it the resurgence, which really started back in the late 90s, and I entered in about early 2000s, we were the first big company to put a fashionable print on a diaper and do it in a way that caused the cloth diaper itself to become collectible and actually increase in value over time.
Well, that's interesting. See, yeah. I did not know that. So are we going to find these diapers in museums one day as like a work of, it's like a work of art?
I mean, we could call the Smithsonian together and see if we can make a case for it.
Sounds good. Let's try it. Well, you know, there's so much here to talk about. You've got 26 patents now though, Jen, which is just at least 26, maybe more than that.
I don't even know. I don't even know where we're at right now. There's a lot of intellectual property out there. I think one of the things I was most proud of was the day that I realized that we had created collectively more intellectual property in the cloth diaper space than anyone else in the whole world. That is like even more than, you know, Kimberly-Clark or Procter & Gamble or, you know, international disposable diaper companies, we owned a lot of IP, and that was cool. Like it's not a long-term game that you're playing there. It's a 17-year right. game that you're playing per patent, but for sure, it's really cool.
Something to be accomplished. And I'm just going to stop and just say how proud I am of you. I'm really proud of you and Jimmy and your team and what you've done. It's just such an amazing story. Well, you know, we talked a little bit before about just, you know, the cost of these diapers and just per child. And, you know, I mean, it can be a financial drain on people where you said, you know, they could be choosing between food or diapers. You started the Share the Love Diaper Bank, Jen. So tell us more about that. At last count, and I don't know, it could be more than that now, but that bank has distributed enough diapers to replace 3.2 million disposable diapers, yeah. which
I'm
is
sure
incredible.
That number is higher now. I need to recheck that stat because it's been a lot of years since that one was generated. So we got a couple years into Cotton Babies, and I realized that, you remember how I shared that I thought that maybe I would go be a missionary and
yes.
work to help relieve poverty for people other places in the world. And I wasn't content with what it meant to just produce revenue. I also needed to be making an impact. So it's important to make a planetary impact. It's important to obviously produce revenue for your people that work for you and your family. But I gained more personal value out of seeing the looks on the faces of the moms that we were able to help with diapers. So what we did is we brought the life cycle full circle with our diapers, where we collected diapers that families were done with and they weren't going to give them away back. And then we would redistribute those to families that were on some kind of federal assistance. And I love that. It's the favorite thing that I get to do every week is go through those applications and approve those moms for diapers.
It's amazing. Well, and I love the name of it, you know, Share the Love, because that's what you're doing. You're loving people.
Yeah.
You know, when you're helping them that way, Jen. So, you know what? It's definitely, I just love your heart. You've got an amazing heart. Well, and I know that you've done some philanthropic work with Service International, which is the, for listeners who don't know, St. Louis Family Church here. Amazing, amazing Pastor Jeff Perry and Patsy Perry. They have their service arm is Service International, and they do a lot around national disasters and disaster relief and that sort of thing. But you've done some things with Sheltering Wings with them. So what is that, Jen?
So Sheltering Wings is different than Service International. Sheltering Wings is a orphanage that's based in Burkina Faso. And for a lot of years, we provided all of the diapers that they needed for the babies that they would take care of in that orphanage. And they would only have those babies for a little while. They would raise them and then they would go back to their families. In most cases, they had a mom that had died in childbirth and the families couldn't provide the direct care that the baby needs. So the orphanage steps in and does that on a temporary basis. So we did that, and then we also helped to fund the milk for the orphanage. So they had to purchase large volumes of formula, and we helped to offset that cost. I couldn't carry it all, but I could carry part of it. So we did that. And then with Service International, my husband and I have both been overseas with them, and also we helped to support JUMP, which is a really cool, huge kids camp here in St. Louis. So that's honestly, I think every year is outside of family vacation, that's what we look forward to the most.
Yeah, that is, yeah. And for any listeners with littles, I don't know the age that they go through. You probably know that more, but it's like 5,000 kids or something like that, isn't it, Jen? I mean, it's, or maybe even more than that now. I have no idea, but it's a summer, kind of like a summer vacation Bible school. So check that out if you have some littles in your home. Well, Jen, and I'm gonna talk about something here that, I'm gonna really ask you to be vulnerable. And I know that you'll feel okay talking about this, but just because there may be some listeners out there that maybe are even going through something like this right now. And I think it's good. I love when we share our stories. I think stories, I think everybody, I happen to believe everybody has a story, right? And I believe that when we share our stories, I think it has the possibility of helping other people because they can see themselves in that story and they can see how that person overcame whatever it was that they were going through. But, I think the stat is 1 in 7 women will have postpartum depression. And so there is a very good chance that we have listeners that may go, I'm going through that right now. But, talk about the experience that you had. I think it was after Andrew. And there were, it was probably the perfect storm for you. It was a very difficult time financially and with you and Jimmy both being laid off. I mean, it was a difficult time. So tell us a little bit about that and how did you make it through, Jen?
I think I realized that I had postpartum depression when my doctor asked me about it, and I had to lie. And I didn't plan to lie to my doctor. I didn't know that that's what I was feeling until he asked me about it. And I was like, oh, I don't know if I should have all those feelings. And maybe I don't want to own up to that right now. And because I made that decision in that doctor's appointment, I really ended up carrying a lot of the weight of what was going on with me that was really chemical and about my body's recovery from a really hard childbirth experience and what was going on in our family, really by myself. And I had a good friend up the street. I was supposed to be her doula. She was my doula when my baby was born. And she ended up having her baby. She literally delivered minutes before I left the hospital. Like she went into labor early. And she had a beautiful home birth in the bathtub with her husband, unassisted. And my hope had been not that I would have a home birth, but I would actually be able to go unmedicated, that my baby would breastfeed. And instead, I brought home a baby that was he refused to latch. So I was pumping and bottle feeding my baby. And I went out to visit her instead of going straight home from the hospital. I went out to go see her new baby. And I hid in a room to pump because my baby was hungry and crying. And I was shaking, tired. And, you're just exhausted when you come home from having a baby. And I remember thinking, what did I do wrong? Like, where did this train get off the rails? Like, how did, and she's sitting over there. She already looks like she's back to her regular size again. She's holding this perfect tiny baby who's latched to her. And it just seems so idyllic. And I really felt like I had done something wrong. And then that because I had specifically because I'd gotten an epidural, because my doctor was going to take me in for a C-section if I didn't, that I had caused him to not be able to latch, which is all lies. Like none of this is true. None of it is true. But the lies build on the lies, build on the lies, build on the lies, and all of a sudden you can't like dig out. Jimmy couldn't find a job. And we just felt like we were financially trapped. We were never going to get out of it. And cotton babies and building that thing that cotton babies was becoming in those early days, really, it gave me something to do. It gave me something to think about, gave me something to engage in. And I credit the early days of cotton babies with pulling me out of that initial postpartum depression. And then it came back when my youngest was born, when Louis was born. And we were in a different season of the business. We had a lot of very loud customers. I had gotten some death threats. There was just some kind of strange things happening in the industry at that point in time. And I went from being this really outgoing, engaged person who was excited about what was next to I couldn't even go to the mall or to the grocery store because I couldn't. The anxiety was just paralyzing. And we moved, my husband broke his leg when we moved into a new house, and I couldn't like go in the basement and shut the lights off because I was afraid of the dark. Like none of this is rational, right? And I finally got on meds. I finally was able to get on an antidepressant because I recognized, you know, and so did my doctor, recognized what was going on at that point. And they helped, and I was able to get out of that. Mm-hmm. But it was really, at that point in time, it wasn't something people talked about. And,
right.
And today people talk about it more, but it really impacts a lot of people.
Well, there's just so much packed in here, Jen, because I'm thinking going back to that first time where weren't truthful with your doctor because you were like, I don't think I should be feeling these things, right? So, I mean, the first thing I would say is, you know, if you're feeling these things, it's okay to ask for help. And the other thing that I would say is, you know, your friend, I'm sure it was idyllic. Perfection does not exist on this side of heaven. Yeah. It does not. But a lot of us chase it, yeah. Right? And we think we have to be the perfect mom and the perfect wife and the perfect business owner and the perfect host if you're hosting people. I have been in that trap before. I mean, I still can fall in that trap of that perfect, but it doesn't exist. I mean, let's give ourselves grace and realize that, listen, we've all got junk, yeah. Right? Yeah. Nobody's perfect, Jen. I don't care what the social media platforms
They're all lying.
It's lies.
Facebook
it's
and lies. Instagram, it's lies. Just a bunch of lies. Move on.
It's a bunch of lies. Exactly. Yeah. So, well, thank you for sharing your story. Yeah. And I, you know, it may help somebody, Jen. And so I appreciate that. So let me ask you.
Hold on. Before you move on, I want to actually speak to that person just quickly.
Yes, please. Would you?
When you're in that space, you feel like you're in a hole, like it is so dark and you don't know where the light's going to come from. You get up every morning and you feel hopeless and you go to bed at night and you can't sleep, or you wake up in the middle of the night and you can't sleep. And I never have regretted asking for help. I never have regretted making the call and actually getting started on something that could help me. And I just want to encourage the woman or the man who is listening to this podcast that if those are your feelings, go get help, because it's not forever. Like, you don't have to be in this place forever. Mm-hmm. There is a light at the end of the tunnel. And the first step is asking for help. I'm in a much better place today. My youngest is now, he's 9 and he's in fourth grade and he's amazing. And my oldest is 20 and he's doing well. I didn't ruin him. So that's just my encouragement. It's just to.
You had an epidural.
Right. I mean, it was the biggest lie in the whole world and it wasn't true. And I didn't know I needed help. So get help. There is a light there is a light at the end of the tunnel.
Thank you for that, Jen. I love that. Well, tell me, let's talk about this real quick before we move into something extra. And you and I could probably sit here for 5 hours, Jen. I mean, literally, I'm just like, my mind's going crazy with the different things I'd love to talk to you about. But you know, I know recently you guys have pivoted cotton babies. Yeah. Tell us, I know how you've done that, but tell our listeners how you pivoted and what your philosophy and how your mindset kind of changed about the business.
Well, most business owners went through a season where we were locked down during the beginning days of the COVID pandemic. And we were lucky in that we were able to stay operational and open. Our product was considered an essential good because it was diapers, and we had to continue making those diapers. So we did, but in the middle of all of that, we had to move our warehouse because our lease was up in that building. And it was up in June of 2020. And I'm pretty sure we ended the lockdown in St. Louis like the last weekend in May. And what we realized in walking through that business move is that maybe we weren't doing all the things that we wanted to be doing exactly the way that we wished that we were doing. And maybe this was an opportunity to move the business in a little bit of a different direction. And we decided to, we moved to a work from home model for everybody. Even our factory workers, gave them a sewing machine so they could work at home. They could come pick up their work at the warehouse and then go back to their home and finish it. We started looking for factories that could help us support additional manufacturing. We found some factories, and we've gradually shifted, you know, as people have moved on from us to other jobs, we've gradually shifted more and more of that manufacturing into those third party factories. I still have some sewers here in St. Louis, but nowhere near as many as I used to. We used to, when pandemic started, we had 65 operational employees, which was just a lot to manage. So I've outsourced, you know, human resources and accounting. We have become a company that is much more nimble, where my husband and I, as the owners, are able to focus on the things that we're really interested in doing and what we want to do with the business and growing it in the direction that we want to take it in, rather than spending so much of our time dealing with the day-to-day operational issues and what it took to have something of that size that was our responsibility to take care of. And it's been fun to watch the shifts and the changes. We have, you know, stayed in contact with all of our staff. They found their own new roles, you know, when the time was right for them. And when it made sense for us to figure out, you know, where to put those responsibilities into an outsourced company, we did it at that point in time. So there wasn't like one big decision where, you know, we went out and made a massive shift. It just happened gradually over time, as it made sense.
Yeah. Well, so much packed in there. Yeah. I mean, what you just said is you don't have to, you know, it's not like shifting left to right, like immediately, you know, the gradual shift. And you're still okay, right, Jen? Mm-hmm. It's okay that you're not doing the accounting internally, that you're not handling HR internally. I mean, the business is still okay. I would imagine for you, there's a little bit more freedom, I would think, a little bit less anxiousness because, you know, you're narrowing your focus. So the things that you're focused on, right? Yeah. That you and Jimmy are focused on. So there's a lot of lessons there. And, you know, I mean, I think it's okay to think differently about your business.
Yeah.
And not be afraid to do that. So that's precisely what you guys have done. So Jen, lots more to talk about, but I know we can't do that to our listeners. I have to ask you though, what do you believe is the something extra that every leader needs?
That something extra is what we bring to the world. I have to speak from my own experience here, but that something extra for me was taking the revenue production and turning it into a meaningful impact for the woman that I was when I started Cotton Babies. And then it was figuring out how to invest in me in a way that would allow myself to grow. I didn't disconnect completely from those original goals. I am homeschooling my daughter this year, and I am a stay-at-home mom, and I'm doing the things that I wanted to do in the beginning. I'm just doing all the other things differently. and giving yourself permission to do things like that, to pick happy and to also do some of these other things, just do them differently, is important for leaders. We rarely give ourselves permission to disrupt ourselves. And that is essential, I think, to personal growth and to business growth.
Yeah. That's awesome. Well, what are you most excited about? And I failed to mention during COVID, you ended up going back to seminary and getting a graduate certificate in biblical studies, right, Jen? There you go. That's that lifelong learner in you and just wanting to continue to learn. But what are you most excited about now? And how can our listeners get involved?
Well, I mean, there's two sides to that coin. I am personally most excited about seeing how God unfolds the next steps in our life. Like, I am really curious about what He has for us. We've never had insight into that. A lot of people have like a 20-year life plan. I never got to have that. It was always, you know, here's what you're doing now. Go for it, Jen.
Right.
So I'm curious about that. And I think, from a business perspective, we have been taking a lot more time to be able to better service the nonprofit side of the world through diapers and then through reusable menstrual pads. We make tens of thousands of reusable menstrual pads that we distribute through banks that help support period poverty in the communities. And then we're also now making diapers that are distributed through other cloth diaper banks. So we have a real opportunity to partner with people who want to make a big difference. Maybe they have resources that they want to allocate towards making that kind of a shift in their local diaper bank. And we have an in-kind program where we bring our costs dramatically down to facilitate that and making that change for diaper banks so they can actually provide an intervention to families in need in their community that lasts for years.
That's great. Well, listeners, and I know Jen would welcome this. She's on LinkedIn. You know, if anything that we've talked about today is of interest to you and you want to know more, make sure that you reach out to her. I know she would welcome that connection. So Jen, thank you so much again for spending time with me today. This was just, I love it. I've just loved our conversation.
Yeah. Thank you. It's always a great pleasure to get to spend time with you and get to experience the magic of what it is to be two women of faith and serving the communities around us. So thanks for everything that you do, Lisa.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to today's show. Something Extra with Lisa Nichols is a Technology Partners production. Copyright Technology Partners, Inc., 2019. For show notes or to reach Lisa, visit tpi.co/podcast. Don't forget to leave a review on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, or wherever you listen.